It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, the landlord has to give a written notice to the guest or visitor and also to the tenant saying that the person is banned from coming over, and it also has to state what they did to cause the banning. It can't just say you're banned, no trespassing. It has to also say you're banned because you came on the property and caused a disturbance.
Brenda Castaneda, staff attorney at the Legal Aid Justice Center in Charlottesville, talks about what a landlord must do to legally bar or ban a tenant's guests or visitors, and the many ways landlords don't follow the law. And during our weekly question and answer session, you'll learn how a debt that has been forgiven may not cost you anything in taxes, even though the creditor has written it off. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 154, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. On January 12, the Office of the Virginia Attorney General reached a settlement that refunds almost $600,000 to some customers of car title lender CashPoint, which has 14 locations in Virginia. Between October 1 and December 1, 2010, Dominion Management, under the name of CashPoint, operated a car title loan business without the required license. Although CashPoint filed an application for a license on September 27, it did not receive the license from the State Corporation Commission until December 2nd. During that two-month period, CashPoint operated without a license and made 913 car title loans at interest rates that greatly exceeded Virginia's legal limits and did not come within any exception, such as the one granted to car title lenders. Under the settlement, CashPoint will refund more than $592,000 to more than 850 borrowers for the amount their borrowers paid in addition to the principal amounts of their loans. CashPoint will not try to collect interest or any other fees or amounts above the principal, will return car titles to any borrower who made payments equal to or exceeding the principal, and agreed not to repossess vehicles. In addition, CashPoint will pay the Attorney General $25,000 and a $10,000 civil penalty. According to Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, or VPLC, although the Attorney General's office should be thanked for their work here, it shows that Virginia loan sharks ignore the law, pay a very small price, and go right along with business as usual. It seems like CashPoint is paying a lot of money, but this is only an average of less than $700 per borrower. CashPoint was potentially liable for several thousand dollars to each borrower for violating usury laws. CashPoint would have gotten away with making car title loans before receiving its license, but a few borrowers called for assistance to the toll-free hotline at VPLC, who figured out what they had done. Each time they made one of these loans, 913 times, CashPoint committed a Class 1 misdemeanor punishable by 12 months in jail and a fine of $25,000, either or both. This is not the first time the Virginia Attorney General has had to sue CashPoint, which also has been sued by the Washington, D.C. Attorney General. If you have any questions about the settlement, rather than calling the company that did this, call the Virginia Poverty Law Center's toll-free hotline 1-866- 830-4501. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Baytop versus Baytop. In October 1957, the Middlesex County Circuit Court granted Lillian Baytop a divorce from her husband, Thomas Baytop, on grounds of cruelty. The husband appealed, saying that the wife's testimony was uncorroborated and insufficient to sustain the decree. The Supreme Court of Virginia held that the testimony and the exhibits showed that the husband never established a home for his wife, that he humiliated her, was often rude, and became cold and indifferent toward her, and engaged in illicit relations with another woman. Though no physical cruelty was inflicted, yet it sufficiently appeared that this conduct over a long period of time materially and detrimentally affected her health and nervous system. The evidence sustained the award to the wife of a divorce. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Baytop versus Baytop is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for our weekly question and answer session, and we're here with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Jamie. I'm from Richmond.
Thanks for being on the show, Jamie. What is your question for us?
I have a question about debt collection practices. I was told by a debt collector that if my debt was over $2,000 and I settled for under that amount of about $500, I would have to basically report the rest on my taxes. Is that correct?
Well, Jamie, that's a great question. And it turns out that the answer is it depends. Now, a lot of creditors will use the threat of sending a Form 1099 to a debtor as a means of extorting money from the debtor, basically saying, you'd better pay us or you better settle with us and pay the settlement, or else we're going to send you a Form 1099, and that's going to cost you in taxes, and rather than pay taxes to the government, you should just pay us the money instead. However, in most cases, that Form 1099 is not going to cause the taxpayer to have to pay any taxes at all. Now, a creditor that forgives part or all of a debt is required to send a Form 1099 to the debtor because the forgiveness of a debt is treated by the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, as if you received income. In other words, you kept money rather than having to spend the money to pay the debt. So the IRS considers that income. However, the question then becomes, is that income really reportable on your income tax form? And the answer is no, not in certain circumstances. In particular, a debt that's been discharged or canceled or forgiven cannot be treated as taxable income if it meets one of the exceptions that's been created by statute or been created by a court decision. Again, the general rule is that it is income, but there are exceptions that in this situation really almost swallow the rule. First of all, if the discharge occurs in a bankruptcy case, then it is not considered taxable income. In addition, the statute also excludes from gross income any forgiveness of debt that occurs when the taxpayer is insolvent. The only limitation there is the amount excluded cannot exceed the amount by which the taxpayer is insolvent. Now, what insolvent means is that your liabilities, what you owe, is greater than the value of your assets, that is, what you own, at the time immediately prior to the discharge of the debt. So, for example, you add up everything that you owe, and it's $30,000. You add up everything that you own, and it's $20,000. You're insolvent. So, as long as no more than $10,000 worth of debt is forgiven by that Form 1099, it is not considered taxable income. You don't have to report it on your tax form. And if the IRS were to ever come after you and to say, this Form 1099 was filed, you didn't list this income on your tax form, then you could simply come back to the IRS and say, I didn't list it because I was insolvent at the time. So this becomes a little bit tricky when you do get that Form 1099. You do have to try to figure out, well, am I insolvent? Am I not insolvent? I mean, most people who are so deeply in the hole that they can't possibly pay their debts and they get that Form 1099, the creditor's written them off, they probably are really very deeply in the hole. And in that situation, they're insolvent. They don't have to pay taxes on that money. If people have any questions about this, however, there is an extremely good resource for them to check out, and that would be the Community Tax Law Project. They can be reached at 804-358-5855. They also have a web page, and it is www.ctlp.org. And they offer free volunteer income tax help for anyone who is a low-income person. That would be basically under about 200% of poverty. So again, that's the Community Tax Law Project, and that's 804-358-5855 or www.ctlp.org. I hope that's helpful to you. Thanks for your question. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law offices of the Legal Aid Justice Center in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we're speaking with staff attorney Brenda Castaneda, and we will be talking today about barred banning policies that are issued by landlords. Welcome to the show, Brenda.
Thank you.
Would you first tell our listening audience, what right does a tenant have to have guests and visitors come to their residence?
Well, the tenant has possession of the residence, so they can legally treat it like their own, and they're able to have anybody they want come and visit. You know, as long as the landlord doesn't say no, until that happens, the tenant can have anybody they want to come over.
Now, a lot of landlords think that they have the right to just come and go as they please and can control who comes and goes to the tenant residence. Would you care to dispel that myth?
The landlord doesn't have the right to come and go as they please. Under common law, they really have no right. They're just giving the right to the tenant, and the tenant has total right to be there with no interruption from the landlord. Most leases will specify, though, that the landlord has certain rights to come on the property to deal with conditions or to inspect the property if necessary, but they have to give notice to the tenant. They have to call ahead of time. Private property owners do have the right to control who has access to the property and to have no trespassing signs and so forth, but when the landlord's elected to have a tenant and give the right of possession to the tenant then has certain rights as well to have guests and family members and friends come over and visit.
So are you saying that a no trespassing sign that's put up by a landlord really would not even apply to a guest or visitor of a tenant?
Right. If the tenant has invited somebody there, then that person has a right to be there.
What would happen if the landlord were to, say, call the police and say, well, this person violated this no trespassing sign? What should the tenant in that situation do? Well, what should the guest in that situation do?
Well, the guest should inform the police that they're there with permission of the tenant, and it shouldn't be a trespassing violation for the tenant to have a guest come over.
Okay, now what if the landlord wants to actually legally bar or ban a tenant's guest or visitor from coming? What does the landlord have to do?
Well, the landlord has to give a written notice to the guest or visitor and also to the tenant saying that the person is banned from coming over. And it also has to state what they did to cause the banning. It can't just say you're banned, no trespassing. It has to also say you're banned because you came on the property and caused a disturbance.
And are there any list of reasons why someone can be banned? I know you'd said that the notice has to describe the conduct of the guest or visitor that's a problem, but can it be any reason at all, or does it have to be a certain type of reason?
There has to be a good reason, and it can be something that would be a violation of the lease if the person was a tenant. So doing something that disturbs the neighbors, disturbs other tenants, or, you know, just would otherwise, you know, be a violation of the lease where the person and tenant, causing property damage, that sort of thing. It could also be because they did something that was a violation of a local ordinance or a violation of the law, so criminal activity.
So what if the landlord just says to a tenant or a guest or both, this person is barred or banned? What effect would that have?
That has no legal effect. If they just say it, they don't give any written notice, that just has no legal effect. The tenant can still have that person come over. They're free to have them visit whenever they want.
Well, and a lot of landlords will write a person's name down on a list that's maintained in the management office, or maybe they'll have the security people do that, and they'll say, well, I've written this person's name on the list. They're barred or banned. Again, what effect would that have?
Again, a private property owner can decide to give a no trespassing. They can put up a no trespassing sign, or they can give written no trespassing notices to particular people. So to the extent that person is not a guest of anybody, that does, you know, effectively bar them from the property. If they come back, they would be trespassing. It could constitute a lease violation for the tenant to have that person come on the property and visit them if the tenant has notice. But if the name's just on a list at the central office and the tenant's never been given a written notice saying Joe Smith can't come visit you, then it's not a lease violation for the tenant. It could be a trespassing charge for the visitor.
Okay, now what would happen to a tenant or a visitor if the landlord properly does a barred banned notice? That is, they give a written notice to the guest or visitor, they give the written notice to the tenant, and the notice does as you describe. It describes what the visitor's problem is, it describes how it violates the lease or the law, and the tenant or the guest disagree. Is there any remedy here?
Yeah. Of course, I would recommend first that a tenant talk to their landlord and see if they can work it out. But if the landlord won't talk to them or doesn't have a process for addressing that sort of thing, there is a process through state law by which a tenant can go to the court and say to the court, I want to have this person visit. Here's why. Or they weren't properly banned. They didn't do something that constituted a lease violation or a violation of law, and I want them to be unbanned so they can visit me.
Okay, and which court would they go to in that situation?
They would go to the general district court in the city or county where they live, where the property is located, and they would file something called a tenant's assertion.
Okay, and what, if anything, do they have to bring to court with them in order to file the tenant's assertion? I mean, the tenant's assertion typically is used for a situation where the tenant is current in rent and has given written notice of a repair issue, and the landlord hasn't made the repair within a reasonable period of time. So the tenant comes to court with the notice they gave the landlord, and they have the next month's rent, and they file the tenant's assertion. This is kind of a different kind of a tenant's assertion. So what would a tenant bring to court to challenge that barred banned notice, to file the lawsuit, the tenant's assertion?
Well, if they have a copy of the notice, the barred notice that was given either to the tenant or to the guest that they want to get unbarred, they should bring that. And then any other proof they have relating to the reasons maybe they want the person unmanned, or any kind of evidence they have showing that the person didn't do the things that are alleged that they did that caused them to be banned. I think it would really depend on the situation.
Okay, well, now let's assume that the landlord gives some kind of a barred banned notice and it's defective in some way. It wasn't given to both parties, or it didn't describe the conduct, or the conduct didn't violate the lease or the law, and the tenant, for whatever reason, chooses to do nothing about that, and then later, maybe weeks or months or possibly even years later, the landlord comes back and says, you've had this barred banned person on the property, we're giving you a notice to vacate, to terminate your tenancy. What should the tenant do in that situation?
Well, first of all, like I said, it's not a lease violation if the tenant didn't get a written notice saying that the person was banned and why they were banned. So if they didn't get the notice, then it's just not a lease violation. You know, maybe the tenant could be a little bit proactive and write to the landlord or talk to the landlord and say, I didn't get this notice, so this really isn't a lease violation. But really, it's up to the landlord at that point to file for eviction in court. And the tenant then has the right to go to court and say, I don't agree with this. It's not a lease violation. I want a trial date, and present that to the court.
Well, and in your experience, do you find that most landlords, when they bar or ban a guest or visitor, are doing it properly, or they're not doing it properly? What's been your experience here?
I don't find that private landlords do a lot of barring or banning, you know, other than maybe saying, I don't want that person there. The one instance I can think of where a landlord was doing it, they weren't doing that properly. They were just kind of telling the tenants, well, I don't like this person, I don't like that person, they're trouble. But that's, you know, that's not really good enough. The tenant can have whoever they want there unless there's really, you know, a valid reason under the law not to have them there. As for housing authorities or other sort of subsidized places, a lot of them do have ban lists. And for the most part, I find that they will notify the person who's banned, but they don't notify the tenants.
And so that would not be a valid banning?
It can be a valid banning as to that person who's not a tenant, right? Like, it could be a trespassing violation for them to come back, but it's not going to be a lease violation then for any tenant who has the person over who hasn't gotten the written notice.
Okay, so let's assume that the landlord has, in fact, done a valid banning or barring. Is there any limit on how long that bar lasts, or is it just indefinite?
It's indefinite until the tenant challenges it.
And so can the tenant pretty much challenge it at any time by going through that tenant's assertion process?
Yes.
And would you recommend that tenants do that if they really think either that it wasn't a problem or that maybe it was a problem but enough time has passed that the ban should be lifted?
Right. I would recommend that. I don't feel like tenants do that enough. And the tenant's assertion process isn't one that most people know about. And it's not a difficult process. It could be done pro se, meaning you don't necessarily need a lawyer. It might be difficult to get it filed. The clerk's office might not be as familiar with that, using that tenant's assertion for unbanning someone versus using it for redressing problems, things you want repaired on the property. But I would recommend that they do that. It's a simple, straightforward process. They'd get their day in court. They'd get a chance to present to the judge what evidence they have. The landlord gets a chance to respond, and the judge will make a decision right then and there.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Brenda Castaneda. She is a staff attorney at the Legal Aid Justice Center in the Charlottesville office, and we have been talking about the proper and improper ways for landlords to bar or ban a tenant's guest or visitor from rental property. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 43, which deals with mechanics and certain other liens. Under Code of Virginia Section 43-33, a mechanic who repairs any article of personal property, usually a car, at the request of the owner, has a lien or claim upon the property for the repair charges and may keep the property until the charges are paid. If you own the property free and clear, the lien is for the total of just and reasonable charges. But if you're still paying for the property, the lien is limited to $800 of just and reasonable charges. This may be the only time there's a benefit to still owing money on your car. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral for, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If your finances are bad enough so you need a bankruptcy, are your abilities good enough to file it on your own? Join us next week when private attorney and friend of the show, Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services, reveals the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.